Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and we are diving into wine programs today as we officially wrap up the harvest season, kind of. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, October 9th, I'm recording it this morning. Should be posted by the early afternoon if you're listening to it. We just got finished processing our last batch of grapes for the season. We are officially all in. The harvesting is complete and the winemaking is beginning. So with that, we are already starting to plan where these wines are going to go, what we're going to do with them, how we are going to kind of push them in the direction of what people expect from our own wine portfolio. And I figured it was a good time to kind of dive into that a little bit and how us wineries kind of build out these wine programs starting from literally day one. Before we get into it, of course, thank you all for liking, sharing, subscribing to the show. It means the world. Just a quick reminder that if you have a brief moment and can leave a quick review or a little rating wherever you're consuming the podcast, that's hugely helpful in getting us out into the airwaves and the algorithm. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. It's at MTGA Wines. We are most active here on YouTube as well as on Instagram. We are also posting content on the Book of Face and the social network formerly known as Twitter, although we are less active on those. Fair warning if you're trying to, you know, do anything with that. Do I have any other special announcements? My harvest brain is officially like toast. Oh, yes, we do have upcoming events. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. Click on the shop link. We have tickets available to some of those events. The HBIC is going to be out in Dallas. She's going to be out in Nashville. I'm going to be in Missouri. I'm going to be in Atlanta, hopefully Tampa. I know you guys are going to be going through it in the next like 48 hours, so stay safe out there. We're supposed to have an event out there in about a month's time, so we're keeping an eye on that, but we wish all the best for you guys. Stay safe, please. And then we'll also be up in Charlotte. You can find more information on those upcoming events, purchasing tickets, all that good stuff on our website. For those of you that want to participate in our monthly Q&A series, at the end of every month, I try and answer as many questions as I can in one of these episodes. These are questions that have all been submitted during tastings at the winery, as well as those of you that slide into our DMs. You can go to our website, mtgawines.com. If you scroll down a little ways on the homepage there, you'll see a little email form. Fill that bad boy out, and you can submit as many questions as you would like. I think that is about it, other than we have our fall newsletter going out for many of you that are subscribed to that. You can also head to our website, mtgawines.com, as I mentioned. Click on the mailing list link, fill that out real quick. You'll receive the upcoming newsletter. That's all of the announcements that I have for now. I'm sure there's something I forgot. I will address that in another episode at another time. Right. Okie dokie then. Oh, my camera's like a little wonky. Let me see if I can adjust that real fast. Maybe not. Oh, I think I broke it. Oh my God. Note to self, don't do technical things. That's a little better, actually. That's a little better. Okay. Don't do technical things on the fly as you're recording. It goes poorly, no matter what you try and do. All right, the wine program side of things. Now, it might be a little hard to imagine, but it is in fact the case that as we start making wine, literally the day we start making wine, there's a plan. At least there should be a plan. I know a handful of people where it's like, yeah, we'll just see what happens. I'm like, all right, cool. Good luck with that. But for many people, there is some sort of plan of like, how do we, you know, get this sweet raw grape juice to be this thing that we want it to be, that our customers expect? How do we build out this program and this portfolio starting from day one? And you have to start with kind of day one. Sometimes you get to be known for certain things that maybe you didn't expect. Sometimes you're trying to make a splash with a certain variety or style, and that's where you really want your kind of flagship, you know, product to be. Might be some combination of the two. You're never really quite sure. But I will tell you that there is just, you have to have a little bit of vision. Whether you're bottling that wine in 6 months or you're bottling that wine in 4 years, you got to figure out a way in between all that time to get that wine where you want to go and build out the program that you want to have. So how do you go about doing that? What do wineries consider when they are building out a program? Well, we are going to tell you all about it. First and foremost, I mean, every winery and their winemaking team probably have some idea of what they want to be known for, whether that's Napa Cab, whether that's Lodi Zin, whether that's, you know, Italian Chianti, whatever. Insert wine region, grape variety, and style. Like, there's this kind of, you know, box that you're trying to fill in, right, of what you're trying to achieve with your program. And, you know, a lot of times, it just trucks right along. You kind of just go right with it. You find the vineyards you want to be using, the barrels that you want to use that are going to lean towards that style of wine. But you do have to kind of take it one step further. And that step further is really truly kind of building out the kind of, you know, how you're going to, like, what the framework is going to be for, you know, your portfolio, so to speak. So I want to show you that and give you kind of like a little bit of insight into how that works. So let me minimize my camera here. And it might be just a tad blurry. Hopefully it's not too crazy. But basically right here in this form that I'm showing you, these are all the wines that we make, from our white wines, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Red Blend, Cabernets, Brittany's wines under Blair Payton, and then of course some of the like smaller production stuff over here. For all intents and purposes, we're going to kind of focus on this other section, this little section down to the lower right hand corner, this guy right here, we can kind of ignore. Those are a lot more of not necessarily one-offs, but really small production stuff that don't necessarily have like a big impact on like the overall program or portfolio that we're utilizing here. Now, many of you know, you've been listening to the podcast for a while, but maybe there's some new blood out there listening to this. Merlot right here, this baby. This is our flagship. This is what we started with. This is what we're known for. And everything we've done in the history of our winemaking has kind of centered around this wine. Oh, I got to point this way, because it's up there. Boop, boop, boop. I got to point to the left so that it, even though that screen is on my right, it's a little bit discombobulated. But don't worry about that. I'll take care of it. So this was the building block. This guy right here. This is what did it all for us. And depending on kind of where you want your wines to actually go and where to be, you know, you can decide, hey, maybe we're just going to do this one thing, and we're going to do this one thing really, really well. We're not going to make anything else. We're just going to focus on this and do the best we can with it. We were at a little shindig last night at a Charlie's out in St. Helena. Amazing kind of local restaurant. They just celebrated their 1-year anniversary. Congrats to them. They've been killing it. Ran into one of my good buddies, George, who works down the street over at Anomaly Vineyards. And they make just like one Cabernet. I think they do like every once in a while something a little bit different, or maybe a second SKU or a second wine. But for the most part, they focus on like one thing. They just want to be great at that one thing. And that's all they do. Awesome. Good on you. More power to you. That's great. In fact, man, that would make life so much easier. But some of us are just crazy enough, as you can see, to add a lot of other stuff outside of this Merlot that I'm pointing at. But even though you're going to add on like a lot of variety in a wine program, you still want to be like, okay, there needs to be like this focal point, and that needs to take up the lion's share of what we do. Now, I get asked a particular question. This is something that I've been asked, and I haven't included it in one of our Q&A sessions at the end of each month because I was waiting for this episode. And the question I get fairly often is, hey, you know, you're 15 years in. If you were to do it again, you know, is there anything that you would change? What would you do differently? And there is something I would change. And this is exactly what I would do differently. And that is this little guy right up top here. The white wines. We've made some Riesling in the past. We've been making Pinot Gris or Grigio, same grape, just different regions, more recently. The reason I highlight these white wines is because these are your Chateau cash flow wines. I gotta tell you, starting with Merlot down here and waiting 3 years when I was making not hardly any money. I was living in good old Section 8 low income affordable housing from basically 2010 here through 2012. There's about a 3-year period there where money was very tight. And in that 3-year period, as you're making wine and you're making a big red like this, it's going to take you 3 years before you can even start selling anything. So this 2010 Merlot, that's like right here at the top, we didn't start selling that until late 2012 or into 2013. It took a while until that wine was ready and until we kind of got everything set up like business-wise to go. I was in a lot of debt as it was already, much less trying to start some random wine project on a whim. That's pretty much what it was back in the day. What I would have done is had a white wine in the lineup. That's the one thing I would have done, because what you can do, and this is what we do with a lot of our the white wines we produce, is you can have that blended and bottled the next winter, that following winter or spring. So right now, as I'm standing here talking to you, our white wines and even Brittany's rosés are in essence done. All we have to do is blend them and bottle them. And that's going to happen at the end of February, maybe early March. It's basically a 6-month process. And that way you can start generating some sales and some cash flow really early on. So while wineries might be known for their Cabernet, or like us, we're known for our Merlot, a lot of places will have these lighter bodied white wines, or maybe even Pinot Noir, like a lighter bodied red, things that they can release a little bit quicker to get some cash flow going. So that is a key component of any wine program. Maybe not any wine program, because if you're going to focus on that one thing, then you're just going to do that one thing really well. But if you're going to have some variety, this is the kind of stuff I recommend to people when I'm consulting and trying to figure, like, let people know, like, hey, here's a great way and things to consider, is that if you're going to start making a big red wine early on, that's great. You're going to have to wait for a few years until you see any cash flow from that. If you're worried about paying the bills and you don't have oodles of money from a former or current, you know, business endeavor or career that you've cashed out of, then maybe you do something like this. You add something that is going to be a little quicker to release, quicker to market, and you can organize your portfolio to have this great focus that's kind of coming down the pipeline, but you have a couple of things to kind of pay the bills as you go. The treacherous part of that, of course, that if you're waiting for 3 years for something like Merlot to be ready and you start selling white wines and Pinot Noir before that, you might become known for these rather than this. You know, that could be the issue. So I understand why maybe you wait those 3 years anyway, but damn it, I wouldn't. I'd be like, hey, this is coming soon. You're welcome to pre-order it. It's going to be available in the future, but we've got these right now. That's how I would do it. That if I were to do anything differently, that is how I would do it. So your white wines, it's one of my favorite terms in winemaking and in this industry, is Chateau cash flow. They are wines that we make. We love making them. We enjoy the hell out of them. But they are certainly a part of like the business plan to make sure we can stay afloat through the months where we don't necessarily have any red wines ready or available to sell just yet. They are incredibly important, and any of these kind of quick to release wines can be hugely beneficial to a wine program. The Pinot Noir is very much the same light as that. Those are two things that we use to kind of bolster what we do. They're not meant to be something that defines our program. We want them to be great additional wines that are available to people, but they're not necessarily supposed to be these, you know, pillars that hold up the program. That's going to be saved for some of the bigger reds that we'll get into on this list. So as we're starting like making wine, if you're starting, like if this happened to be like year one for us and we're just making wine for the first time, we'd have some white wine, we'd have some Merlot, we'd have some Cab Franc, we'd have some Cabernet Sauvignon in the cellar right now, which would allow us to kind of build out this entire program and this list that you see here. For those of you that are just listening, we have kind of the full MTGA list of wines here, just kind of use it as an example. You know, that's how we would frame it, is be like, hey, here are all the components, and this is how we're kind of going to build out this wine program. And that's what we did. So this first like big section, like almost the half of this page are the wines that we in essence started with. Merlot being number one, obviously taking up the lion's share of that. Pinot Noir came third, actually. It came in 2015. We started making Pinot Noir. We started making white wine, some dry Riesling, back in 2013. So we had these kind of three things that we became known for, and that allowed us to kind of be successful. If I had not added on that white wine, if I had not added on Pinot Noir, we just focused on Merlot, I'm fairly confident that I wouldn't still be in business doing this today, because we needed those things to kind of build out this portfolio. Keep in mind that 15 years ago, everybody hated Merlot, and people still qualify it. Like, oh, I actually like Merlot. Oh, it's like, oh, you actually like it? It's okay just to like it. You don't have to like qualify your preferences. Merlot is great. It's in some of the most iconic wines in the world. It's one of the most iconic varieties in the world. It's great to like great Merlot. It's totally okay. You don't have to feel bad about it. Even if your, you know, Cabernet drinking friends make fun of you, just laugh at them, because they don't know. They just don't know. It's fine. They don't know any better. Maybe one day they'll get the picture. Who knows? Now, once you have this like portfolio built out, you know, you start kind of enacting, you know, how do you, you know, make sure that you stay known for this thing? Because I've seen this happen to some brands. In fact, some that I've worked for, they wanted to be known for this Cabernet Sauvignon, this section kind of in the top right here of the list. They wanted to be known for big, badass Cabernet. But you know what they were known for? Their rosé. It was the most, arguably the most popular wine that they made. And that's a tough spot to be in, because those are basically the complete opposite ends of the spectrum. So how do you, you know, how do you prevent something like that? How do you prevent something like, hey, we want to be, continue to be known for Merlot like ourselves. How do we make sure that something else in this price list, you know, doesn't cannibalize what we're trying to achieve here, right? That's a huge thing. That's a huge conversation to have. And the best advice I can give is that everything else that's like on our list, for example, is smaller production than the Merlot. This is still the lion's share. This is the wine that we make the most of. It's what's readily available more often than not. We have a lot of wines that are available, but many of them are sold out. In fact, there are a ton of past vintages here that are just not listed for some of our other wines, like our Red Blend. You know, that's, we've been making that since 2017. That's through 2020 are all sold out. We only have the 2021 available. Our Cabernet, we have just barely two vintages available. There's a little bit more of the 21, a whole lot less of the 2020. We're going to be selling out of some of our older vintages of Pinot Noir here shortly, because we've got some orders placed that we haven't processed. This is also an old price list, but we're using it as an example. There are a few other Cabernets that are sold out. There are a few of our other wines like our Cabernet Franc that are sold out. Like, there's a lot of stuff available here, but at the same time, the thing that's mostly available is Merlot, right? If you're going to be known for something, make sure you have that available. That's probably the best piece of advice I can give if you really want to be known for something. I would rather make, and then Brittany felt this way too, we would rather make a little bit of rosé and have it be great and sell out of it and keep people wanting more than have too much of it. That's a huge game you got to play in this industry as well, is that if you kind of jump on something, and this happened to our Pinot Noir actually, to kind of jump back to this side of the thing, is that we love making Pinot Noir. It's our least popular wine. We sell less Pinot Noir than anything else. And that's a bummer. That makes me sad. But we got to give the people what they want. I can't keep just banging my head against a wall with this Pinot. So we got to decrease production a little bit. Try and figure out, does this still fit in the grand scheme of this entire program? Right? If we're trying to make Merlot the focus, do we really need to put that much effort into a Pinot Noir program and trying to force it? Maybe, maybe not. Those are decisions that you have to make. If we're going to continue to try and be known for something, we can't let something else supersede it, especially if it's not working, right? That's a huge, huge thing that you have to consider when building out a program like this. I should say this as well. I probably should have mentioned this at the very beginning as a caveat. I have certainly overcomplicated what we do. This is an outrageous amount of different wines to have for someone like us that makes like 1,200 cases. It's a little absurd. I went a little crazy. That's totally my bad, which is why over the last 4 years, we've kind of been dialing this in and trying to figure out like what avenues are we specifically going to go down. That way we can, unfortunately, axe a few of these from this list and say, hey, these are just things we're not doing anymore. We have the St. Viateur Cabernet, for example. This is one that we made for a few years where we're like, this is great. We would love to keep doing this, but it doesn't fit into our program. Like what we want to do with Cabernet isn't this. This is a great wine. We loved making it for 3 years, but it's not where we want our Cabernet program to be down the road. So let's call it what it is. I loved making that wine. It was great. People still love it. We just got big shout out to, I mentioned Mike from a couple episodes ago, I think talking about grape pricing and wine pricing and all that, sent me a note because he had enjoyed a bottle of the 2019 St. Vita recently. And it's a great wine, but it just doesn't fit into our program. It's very different than a lot of the wines we've made. It kind of was stealing a little bit of the limelight, and we're like, okay, we need to kind of figure out where we really want our Cabernet to be. So anyway, you got to make sure you maintain your focus and not have that focus be superseded by something else that's in your program. I think that is really, really important. And if you're going to be building a brand that's known for something, you probably need to make sure that you're actually known for that thing. Or you pivot and you say, hey, you know what? As much as I love making Pinot Noir, the people don't nearly as much. So let's focus on the other things that we're actually good at and that we want to be focused on. And this thing is going to have to kind of get sidelined for a little while. It happens. You have to be constantly evaluating this and deciding like, hey, is this actually working? This is probably like my biggest piece of advice to anybody I talk to in the industry that has their own label. They're trying to grow things, is that you can't just put the blinders on and be like, this is what we do. And if people don't get it, they will. Like that's a tough spot to be in, because if they never get it, you're just throwing money into a pit and lighting it on fire at that point. You're going to have to make adjustments. You're going to have to tweak these programs. You're going to have to figure out what is actually going to make sense for you and for the business. And you're also going to have to give the people what they want. It's all just basic supply and demand at a certain point. Now, to use a little bit more of kind of our personal experience, something like Cabernet Sauvignon, which we touched on just briefly, this is something that we didn't really add on until 2017. I made a list. Some of you might remember, if you've been following MTGA for a while, you might remember we made a tiny bit of Cabernet in 2015. We bottled it only in Magnums. We did one and a half barrels of it. That's not a lot. It was kind of the trial run. That's a long story for another time, but that's how we got our feet wet with Cabernet. And then we started making the St. Vita Cab in 2017. And this may surprise some of you. For those of you that love our Cabernet, you're going to get a little bit of like the inside baseball here. And I don't mean to disparage Cabernet Sauvignon at all, but I didn't want to do it. At the time, I was not interested. I started making Cabernet because, frankly, as a Napa brand, to be taken seriously and be successful, we had to. The fact that we didn't have Cabernet or a red blend therein, it was hamstringing us. We were just treading water constantly. And within a couple of years of adding Cabernet to our lineup, everything changed. And as much as I kind of hate that fact, because I wanted to be known for something else, making Cabernet Sauvignon legitimized our business in Napa. However, we continue to be known for our Merlot. This is something that more often than not, anytime we're introducing new people to our wines, people love our Cabernet. They're all about it. The feedback is great, but people hang their hat on our Merlot still, which has been this really, it felt like walking down a knife's edge trying to make that happen. And I think that is something that any wine program, doesn't matter where you are, what you're trying to do at it. Like I mentioned a couple of times already, you got to give the people what they want. And sometimes you just have to play the game. And maybe you don't want to, but that could take you that, like Cabernet, really, you know what Cabernet Sauvignon does for us as a business? It allows us to do everything else that we want to do. It's a great influx of wines for people that want Napa Cab, that love our style of wine. It allows them to support us and drink what they want to drink. And that selling those wines allows us to make all this other stuff on this list the way we want to. And that's the way we've kind of learned, and I frankly have learned to kind of live with making Cabernet Sauvignon, because it just, it wasn't something that was on my to-do list. It never was. But we did it because if we wanted to be taken serious, we were completely unable to get wine dinners, book events, participate in events. Like it was a grind trying to do it with a lineup that was a white wine, a Pinot Noir, and a Merlot. No, we weren't going anywhere fast. We needed something that would infuse us a bit and move the needle. And Cabernet did it. And right now, as it stands, we make so little Cabernet that it's not stealing the limelight from what truly I want to be the focus. And that is something that is incredibly important to me, and I think incredibly important to any brand. So this is why I mentioned, like, a winery that makes just that one thing and does it really well, it makes it so much easier. You don't have to deal with shit like this. You can just let it ride and be like, hey, this is what we're known for. It's all we got. Take it or leave it. It's all we got. When you're a crazy mad scientist like I am, and you're like, let's do all the things and see what happens, you end up with a list like this, and you have to try and figure it out. And that's okay, because we're figuring it out. But it has taken time. And through about the 2022 vintage, and now going into we're going to start bottling our 2023s next year, we've officially kind of sorted through a lot of these kind of growing pains we've had as a business. And we have a pretty good set of marching orders where we can say, okay, these are what the challenges have been. Here's how we've been able to stay successful and still be known for what we want to be known for. Here's why we get to make things like Cabernet Franc, you know, and kind of have some fun with some of the wines that we produce, like our single barrel Merlot, do something a little bit different within that program. That's why we get to do things like the Grand Cask Cabernet. We're starting to kind of put this puzzle together and make sure that it all makes sense. And that is something that has taken a decade and a half, but here we are, figuring it out slowly but surely. Now, when you have something like Blair Payton, what Brittany's done here, and this is largely why she started her own label and started making her own wines, is because she wanted to do things that were completely different. We're talking Grenache, we're talking Rosé, we've got some Chenin Blanc going right now. Those are puzzle pieces that do not fit into the puzzle that is MTGA wines. They just don't. It's a completely different style, completely different growing area. And I love it because it's so unique and different, but it doesn't make sense, which is why wineries on occasion will start second labels. Opus One has Overture. Screaming Eagle has Second Flight. We have Blair Payton and Diversum. You know, there are plenty of wineries out there, both small cult producers and the big guys, that have all kinds of different labels and different brands that they own, and maybe it's just a couple, maybe it's one or two, maybe it's a bunch of them, that they can use to say, hey, you know what? We want to do this other cool stuff, but we just can't. It's like Silver Oak. Silver Oak started Toomey to be a Merlot and Pinot Noir project. Silver Oak's known for Cabernet. They're not going to dilute that brand by making other stuff. It wouldn't make sense. They want to be known. Silver Oak needs to be Napa Cabernet or Alexander Valley Cabernet, right? Toomey can do all the other stuff. That's great, right? That's great. You know, in the case of like Overture or Second Flight, that's the best of the rest. It's all the wine that doesn't make it into the main blends, the main label. And they don't want that wine to be diluted. They want to make the best wine they can year in and year out. So they cut those lots that don't make it from the herd. And they say, you know what? We'll bottle it up as something else. It's still good juice. We're just not going to use it for the big guns. We're going to put it into the subset of wines where we think it can be successful. And that is a choice that you as a wine brand have to make. Because sometimes you got more wine than you know what to do with. 2023 was like that for us, right? I think 2018 was as well. And it's like, hey, so what do we do with this? Can this wine actually get into the main part of our program? Or do we need to create something else from it? Or are we bringing in something completely different? And do we want to start a whole new brand that allows us to do these cool new things that the original brand simply wouldn't be known for? And they have no place being a part of it. That is a huge, huge conversation. And it's largely why there are some brands that have such a hard time being known for anything, and they kind of spin their wheels in the mud, is because they throw a crazy list like this at the wall and try and do everything all at once all the time under a single label, rather than kind of diversifying and saying, hey, let's have a couple different brands here where, one, we can be known for our big badass reds and Cabernet and Merlot and red blends. And then, hey, here's this cool other label that we can start where we're going to do Rosé, Grenache, and Chenin Blanc. You can do that. As it turns out, you can do that, which is great. It's, again, you're trying not to dilute what you're already doing. You're trying to be strategic and give people what they want and make sure that that brand aligns kind of with that. This is more of like a branding conversation, I guess, than a wine portfolio conversation, but I guess the two are very much intertwined. Now, I did mention like the second label side of things, which is like down here on the right-hand side of this form, we have the Diversum. Some of you have heard of the Diversum. Some of you have tried that wine over the last year or so. We started kind of testing the waters with it. These are wines that we've started making because we're at a production level now where not all the wines we make are going to end up in Blair Peyton. They're also not going to end up in MTGA. There are certain blending cuts that we're now making that, quite frankly, they're not going to make it into these other wines. And we need a place for that wine to go, because I don't want to sell it on the bulk wine market, because we would actually lose money if we were to sell this to other producers so they could just bottle up our pre-made wine. That's a losing thing. It's going to cost us some money to, you know, bottle it, store it, corks, foils, labels, the whole nine. But maybe if we can bottle that wine and create this second label that's kind of unique, different, hence the name Diversum. It's Latin for different, unlike, or opposite. Maybe we can do something kind of cool and different. And maybe that means we can have kind of this tertiary, you know, brand be the best of the rest. Like very solid, good wine, but clearly not as complex or intense as some of the other wines we produce, because those lots just didn't have that kind of character. You know, we don't want to dump good wine down the drain. We don't want to sell it off at a loss. Let's figure out what we can do with it. Hence the comparison to like Overture and Second Flight. That's in essence what these wines are supposed to be. The best of the rest. You know, this good wine at a good price. Enjoy it. Like that's what those are meant to be. So this is where I see a lot of wineries have an issue, is they include some of those wines and the average, you know, quality and complexity of their wine decreases because they're trying to just make volume. They're like, yep, we're just going to use it because we have it. Let's go for it. And the blending gets to be a little bit of a gray area. I'm not saying they're doing it like on purpose necessarily, although there is purpose behind it. But they're trying to meet a certain level of demand, and they have these lots that are solid, but they bring the average quality and complexity down a notch. And that wine that you used to love has grown in production. The quality's not quite where it used to be, and it's still good, but it's not great anymore. And that can happen when you start, you know, making a certain amount of wine. I mean, now more than ever, it's easier to make average wine than it ever has been. It's really easy to make average, just easy drinking wine. And you see, it's why you see so many brands kind of popping up here, there, everywhere. It's why there's a lot of good wine available. To get to that next level of great is a different thing. It's an exponential jump in terms of quality. So at a certain point and at a certain level, and even for us at 1,000, 1,200 cases, we can taste that difference. There are clearly certain barrels that are just frankly, objectively better for what we're trying to do, and there are those that aren't. And we're not gonna dilute what we do for MTGA or Blair Peyton for that matter, just for the sake of volume. That's not what we're gonna do. I would rather start a second label or a third label in this case and say, hey, here's some other cool stuff. It's still really good, but it didn't. This is stuff that did not fit into the rest of this list here. The problem with doing something like that is that if that wine is considered by your clientele better than some of the other stuff you're making, like if for some reason this Diversum cab is better than our Napa Valley cab, that's kind of a problem. So as a producer, you have to be very, very diligent if you're going to make that move and say, hey, we have a lot of extra juice laying around. We're going to start this second or third label. If for some reason that wine is just still really, really good and it butts up against where your higher end wine is, you're going to start cannibalizing your own business immediately. You're toast. I've seen it happen plenty of times. It's a problem. You can also have the opposite happen, where that second or third label is just, it's not very good. And even though it's probably a bargain price compared to something like even our Napa cab, you know, the Diversum's about half the price of that. And I've talked about this for many people because a lot of folks know Anderson's Con Valley Vineyards and some of the second label stuff they've done in the past. And there's been feedback that's been received about some of those, even though we're talking like 10 plus years ago when things were made, that they're like, yeah, we love the Napa Cab and the Alloge and the Right Bank, but this other thing, that was out of left field. Like, it just wasn't it. And so you can have that opposite effect where the odds and ends are just, they're just not good enough. And it hurts your brand image and the value that people associate with your brand of making high quality wine. So starting this second or third label thing, if you're doing something completely different, like Blair Payton, and you're like, hey, here's just this outlet where we can do other cool stuff. Again, using that like Toomey and Silver Oak kind of mentality, where it's like, hey, we want to do more things, but our labels are known for certain things. We can't like force this into here. It's a square peg, round hole kind of situation. Let's just start anew and start from scratch and do something cool and unique and different. That's one thing. When you start, you know, doing kind of the true like second label, like, hey, this is, you know, associated to this, and it's like this best of the rest blend, that's a little bit more challenging because you don't necessarily want to be, again, known for that in particular. And you also don't want it to hurt the image of everything else that you have going on. So this is like this conversation. I love this conversation and how we start thinking about this from day one of, you know, wines are in the cellar. We're in the process of making these bad boys. How do they fit into this jigsaw puzzle when it comes down to it? It is one of my favorite things to do. Oh, all right. Enough of staring at a price sheet. Hopefully that was remotely legible. I don't even know. I'm going to have to double check it after the fact. But hopefully that makes sense to all of you. Because we have gotten the question fairly often of like, how do you decide to make certain wines? How did you, you know, why did you start making Riesling? What was the deal with the Pinot Noir? When you added Cab, like was there anything you were taking into consideration? And everything we talked about today is basically what goes through my head and what I have to try and sort out. If we're going to start making a new wine or we're going to start adjusting our program one way or the other, we are very, very careful and we try to make sure that what we're doing makes sense to you guys, the folks that are going to be enjoying these wines as time goes on. It's incredibly important to us that from a, you know, wine quality perspective, from a branding perspective, from a variety and style, you know, perspective, that all of these things kind of work in harmony, that we're not just making more wine for the sake of making more wine. We're actually making things that are fun, interesting, exciting, yummy, and that hopefully many of you will end up enjoying. It's such a tough conversation to have. I've seen so many brands that are just not known for what they want to be known for, and they keep banging their head against a wall rather than leaning into something they could really lean into. I've seen plenty of brands try and do that second, third label thing, and it just falls flat for any number of reasons, because you're in essence starting a new wine business. Like it's tough one way or the other. And we're trying to do that right now. You know, Blair Payton officially, this is its fourth vintage, 21, 2, 3. Yeah, it's fourth vintage that Brittany's been making her wines. For Diversum, this is going to be the third vintage of those wines. So there's a lot of new things that we're working on, some new irons in the fire, as one might say, just to see what sticks. And if something does, great. And if it doesn't, it might be like our Pinot Noir and start going by the wayside, which is a bummer. But again, you can't keep trying to force it if it's not working. If something's broken, you better fix it. Them is the ropes, I guess. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope you found this kind of, you know, informative in regards to like how we consider adding wines to our lineup, you know, what we are thinking about during harvest as we're creating kind of the rough drafts of these wines and how we're going to massage them and get them to really where we want them to be as the months and years of aging goes on. And how, you know, when you look at a wine list, whether it's at a winery, even a restaurant or a retail shop, how they kind of view it as like, hey, where do we want to be known for things? What do we want to feature? How do we want to go about all that? There's so much to consider. And this is the kind of stuff that we think about behind the scenes to take it kind of behind the wine business curtain and show you like, hey, this is the stuff that really makes some of these businesses go around. And screwing up something like this can be, you know, the difference between whether or not you sink or swim. Be sure to like, follow, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcast. Again, follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube, The Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. That is where we are active, especially on YouTube. YouTube is where you're going to probably find the most content. Instagram will be second, and everything else is a very distant third, fourth. Be sure to check out our website for our upcoming newsletter. You can sign up for it there. That's mtgawines.com. You can also head to our shop, check out some of the events that we have coming up around the country. And last but certainly not least, remember that if you have any questions regarding the wine industry, the business side of it, the winemaking, hospitality, whatever the case may be, if you go to our homepage there, scroll down a little ways, you'll find that little email form where you can submit questions for our monthly Q&A episode. That's all I got. You all have an amazing rest of your week, amazing rest of your day, and we will see you next week here on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.